Isaiah chapter 49. And we'll take time just to read the verses that we want to look at tonight again together. Verses 15, 16 and 18. We read, "Can a woman forget her sucking child, that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee. Behold, I have graven thee upon the palms of my hands. Thy walls are continually before me." Verse 18, "Lift up thine eyes round about, and behold, all these gather themselves together and come to thee. As I live, saith the Lord, thou shalt surely clothe thee with them all, as with an ornament, and bind them on thee as a bride doeth." During the days of D.L. Moody, when he was preaching in Chicago, a man heavily under the influence of alcohol staggered into his church one Saturday evening. He was on his way home, and as he was making his way home from the bar, he saw the church lights, and he decided, because it was a cold evening, that he would go into the church. Of course, with it being a Saturday night, the building was empty, and so he sat down just on one of the pews. As he sat down there on the pews and he looked up at the pulpit where Moody would normally preach from, he was immediately struck by the words above the pulpit. And they were what Moody wanted to be, the motto text of that church. There he simply read the words, "God is love." The man, however, stammering to himself, he remarked, "God is love? God isn't love. If God was love, then he would love me. But look at my life. It's a complete mess. Surely God doesn't love me." He then continued to mutter to himself and made his journey home. But those words, "God his love," they were beginning to etch themselves into his mind. The next day, with it being the Sabbath day, Sunday, he found himself strangely drawn back into that building. And there he sat down. It was the Sunday evening service. And he sat down and began to listen to D.L. Moody preach. After Moody finished the service, as is custom, he went to the door to shake hands and meet and greet the people. But this man, he couldn't bring himself to go to the door. No, rather he was weeping uncontrollably as he was sitting there in the pew. After everyone was met and the door was shut, Moody then came over to him and he put his arm on the man's shoulder. And he simply said, "Sir, is there something I can do for you? Is there something wrong? Is there something in my message this evening that perhaps has touched your heart?" The man responded, "Mr. Moody, I didn't hear a word that you spoke tonight because I couldn't get the words above your pulpit out of my mind. God is love." And after a conversation with D.L. Moody, this man, he gave his heart to Jesus Christ. It was the love of God that eventually drew him. And in these verses, in Isaiah chapter 49, verses 15, 16, and 18, here we have wonderful pictures, essentially, of the love of God. And the wonderful thing about them is this, is that in the context, they were given to a people who had forsaken and essentially forgotten the Lord. They had turned their back on him. They had forgotten him. They had forgotten to realize that God, he loved them. These words were uttered to a people who eventually would forsake the Lord and would wander through Babylon. And as they would wander through Babylon, as they were there being punished for 70 years because of their wandering from the Lord and their forsaking the Lord and their forgetting him, they would begin to get themselves into a strange position where they wallowed in self-pity. Because there, as they were punished rightly for their turning their back on the Lord, it was there that in verse 14 they would say, "The Lord hath forsaken me, and my Lord hath forgotten me." There we find that the people of God, as they were rightly being punished for their sin, their backsliding, their forgetting the Lord, they got themselves into a position where they felt as though the Lord had forgotten them, the Lord had forsaken them. And in these verses, verses 15 through 18, the Lord then essentially reminds them of what that man was reminded of visibly above the pulpit of D.L. Moody, that God is love. And that his love for them, it would never decrease, it would never diminish. Although, yes, they felt forsaken, although they had forsaken the Lord, yet the Lord would never forsake, he would never forget them. And tonight, whilst you might have forsaken the Lord has never forsaken you. He never forgets or forsakes his people. There are times, and especially for some reason, when the child of God is going through heavy affliction, a difficult time, a time of tribulation, a time of testing, that you can get yourself into this position, like the people of God, that the Lord has forsaken me, the Lord's forgotten me. Perhaps whenever you feel the heavy hand of God upon you, perhaps even when the Lord is dealing with you, you feel like Zion here. Of course, Zion's just a reference to the church. And you say, the Lord has forsaken me. The Lord has forgotten me. But tonight the Lord is simply reminding you of the truth that he, yes, is love, but also then that he loves you if you are one of his people. He's reminding you through these various pictures of his love for his church. And tonight, I just want to simply look at these verses. Verses 15, 16, and 18, as I've said, under the heading, God's love for his people. God's love for his people. The first thing I want you to see, thinking about God's love here, is this. His compassion. His compassion. Verse 15, we read, "Can a woman forget her sucking child, that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee." Hereafter, speaking to a people who felt that they were forsaken of God, that they had been forgotten by the Lord then begins to speak to his people through various natural images. And here in verse 15, he would have used an image that the Jews would have been extremely familiar with. The familiar picture of a lady, a mother, and she is concerned, she is compassionate, she is completely taken up with the well-being of her child. That's very, very interesting. Often God is likened to a father in the Bible. You think of those verses that God there, he pitieth his children like as a father pitieth his child. Often God is likened to the father of his people. But here it's as if Isaiah, he elevates that sense of compassion for his people by using the image of a mother and the love she has for her child. The reference here is to the sucking child, and really the reference is to the child whilst still feeding from its mother. It refers to the earliest and most formative years of the child's life. And you think of those days. Those days are the most dependent, where the child, it leans most hardly upon its mother for the basic necessities of life. Perhaps the necessity of food. And the mother, of course, naturally, she is concerned for the growth, for the well-being, for the development of that little one. She wants to ensure it's well-fed. She wants to ensure that it's growing, that it's developing, that it is healthy. She just can't forget that little one. It goes against the natural grain of the mother to forget her sucking child. And it would even be abhorrent to suggest such a thing, that a mother, when her child hears the cries, or she hears the cries of her child, she sees the desire, she sees the need of it being fed, and yet she simply turns its back on it. That's an abhorrent thing. Something natural then that comes to the mother. However, there are times when it does happen. Perhaps the mother, even for a split second, she simply takes her eyes off the child. Or maybe she neglects its feeding time, or she delays the feeding time by 15 minutes, by half an hour. You've all been there, I'm sure, ladies. And there's a wonderful turn then here. And Joseph Benson, he said in verse 15, in the turn on this verse, he said, the turn in this clause is more expressive than a volume. More expressive. He's saying that words cannot put into expression what really is happening here. Because verse 15 we read, yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee. And Isaiah here, he's saying, look, it's extremely unlikely that a mother should forget to naturally meet the need of her child. However, it could happen. Mothers are not perfect. They are born sinful beings, and they are born at times forgetful. He's saying, yes, there is a potential, a slim chance that it might happen. Yea, they may forget. And yet he goes on to say, yet will I not forget thee. And he says this to a people who have forsaken him, who feel as if they are forgotten by the Lord, and he reminds them of this truth, that he would never forget them. He would never forget them. Oh yes, the natural mother, there's a small chance that she might forget her child, but I will never forget thee. And whilst the best of men may feel and forget, the Lord never feels nor forgets. He will never forsake his people. Oh, what a joy tonight to think that the Lord will never forget you. Never. You're constantly in his mind. And you think of the mother and her child, and there's a bond there that's just at times indescribable. And the child is constantly on the mother's mind. And yet there are times when, naturally speaking, there are times when the child maybe just disappears for a split second out of the mind of her mother. But the Lord is saying this, I'll never forget you. Yes, if you are one of my children, if you are mine by union, if you are in relationship with me, then I will never forget you. You remember Joseph? Joseph there, he had been placed in prison, and he interpreted the dreams of the baker and also the butler. The butler was then consequently restored to Pharaoh. And in that altercation in chapter 40 of Genesis, the butler, he promises that whenever, if he was ever to get out of prison again, that he would remember Joseph. However, the butler forgot about him when he was restored to his position. We read in chapter 40, verse 23, yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. So here's a man who states to Joseph, look, if what you're saying here is right, the dream that you've interpreted, then I won't forget you. When I'm promoted again, I'll remember you. But sadly, he forgot Joseph. And yet in the chapter previous, we read these wonderful words in Genesis 39, verse 21. As Joseph entered into the prison, we read, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. Oh yes, men. And this butler, he promised he would remember Joseph, but he forgot him. But the Lord was with him. The Lord never forsook Joseph. And whilst at times men may overlook you, the Lord always observes you. He remembers and never forgets. Yes, there are times when the best of us, we forget. We make a promise and we break that promise. But the Lord never forgets. Never forgets nor forsakes his people. There's a doctor, and he was meeting with his patient on one occasion. The patient had amnesia, and he was always bothering this doctor, and the doctor lost it then with him, and he said, if I've told you once, I've told you a million times, I do not treat amnesia cases. And yes, we may forget, but the Lord never forgets. Can a woman forget her sucking child? Yes, she may forget. There's a slim chance, a slight possibility she might forget, but I'll not forget thee. I'll not forget thee. His compassion. I want you to also see here his connection. His connection. Thinking about God's love for his people, we read in verse 16 now, behold, I have graven thee upon the palms of my hands. In Jewish culture, it was often the custom to make a mark on the hands or arms by puncturing the skin. This is what it really means to be engraven upon the palms of his hands. The graving tool was either a nail or some form of needle. Basically, what would happen would be this. Someone who perhaps you had great affection for, maybe a loved one, maybe a spouse, or even perhaps a friend, or someone who has done some great deed for you, what you would do is you would take a nail and you would engrave them or in some way remember them upon your arm. Therefore, it was something that couldn't be removed. You did it with a nail or you did it with some form of needle. It was something that was permanently etched on your arm or on your hand. Even today, if you are to go to Jerusalem, you will see pilgrims at the holy city. And what do? They mark themselves with a picture of the city or of the temple. And Isaiah here, he takes this thought of having someone special engraved on the hand, and he shows again the permanency of the relationship that God has with his people. Now remember, here's a people and they feel forsaken. They feel abandoned. As I've said, rightfully so, the Lord has given them over. He has spoken to them time after time again through prophets like Jeremiah, prophets like Isaiah, who we're looking at tonight, other prophets as well. He had given them many opportunities. But here, nonetheless, are a people, and they are wallowing in self-pity, and they feel abandoned by God. And yet, Lord reminds them here through Isaiah that they were permanently and indelibly imprinted upon his hands. He was showing them this, that as that mark would be permanently etched on an individual's arm, so he was permanently in a relationship he would permanently identify with. He was permanently connected to this people. You see, the love of Christ is not temporal. Rather, it is eternal. It is an everlasting and a perpetual love. The best of loves, they wax and they wane. Even the most intimate of relationships on earth, they're not perfect. They are tainted by sin. They are marred by sin. Yes, they perhaps can be extremely strong. And the desire of love will always be there. But at times, the expression of love, sometimes it fades, and at other times, it flourishes. And yet, the Lord is reminding you tonight that his love, it never diminishes. There is no ending to that love. It is an everlasting love. Tonight, if you're in Jesus Christ, then you are permanently engraven upon the palms of his hands. You're always in relationship with him. There is never a time, there is never even a moment where you are disconnected from him. No, you're always connected to him. You're always in union with him. You always have that vital relationship with him. And Romans 8 reminds you that nothing, even the devil or hell itself, can separate you from that love. Jeremiah chapter 2, we read in verse 32, "My people have forgotten me. Days without number." And here's Jeremiah, he's prophesying to people, just like Isaiah here, they had forsaken the Lord. And Jeremiah states, and it's a very, very shuddering statement. "My people have forgotten me days without number." He's saying this, they can't even remember when they last remembered me. They've forgotten me days without number. And yet in the same book, what does he say? Jeremiah 31 verse 3, "And we sang about it already this evening. The Lord hath appeared of old unto me, saying, I have loved thee with everlasting love. Therefore with loving kindness have I drawn thee." And he reminded the people of God that whilst they had forgotten him days without number, that he had an everlasting love for them. His love was forever. That's what everlasting means. Forever. No ending. The Lord's love, therefore, is not temporary. It is timeless. You're constantly engraven upon his hands. Yes, there's a reference here to Calvary. Yes, there undoubtedly is. Isaiah, he looks forward, and undoubtedly, there's a reference here where he's looking forward to the thought of us being on the palms of Christ's hands. But that's not the primary reference here. The primary reference is simply the people of God who had abandoned the Lord, and he is now reminding them that he loves them and he'll never forget them. Samuel Rutherford, godly Samuel Rutherford, writing to his congregation from prison, he wrote, "Love is the hottest coal I ever felt. Oh, but the smoke of it be hot. Cast all the salt sea on it, and it will flame. Hell cannot quench it. Many waters cannot quench love. And there's nothing, nothing tonight that can alter in any way, shape, or form the love of God for you in Jesus Christ, if you are one of his children this evening. So his compassion, his connection. I want you to see, thirdly, here his concentration. His concentration. Verse 16, we read, I have graven thee upon the palms of my hands. Thy walls are continually before me. After being told that they were indelibly engraven upon the hands of God, the Jews were then told that their walls were continually before them. Now, perhaps there is a reference here to the walls of Jerusalem, but I don't really think that that is the reference here. The allusion here in the Hebrew, it really has the picture of an architect, and he has the plans or the design of a building or of a house or even of city walls before him. Even perhaps a model. You know the way today an architect, sometimes he would draw up a plan on AutoCAD or SolidWorks, whatever the program might be. But there even at other times he goes a step further and he gets a 3D model of the building, of the house, whatever the project might be. Well, it was exactly the same in Bible times. There is nothing new under the sun. Even in Bible times, whilst it obviously wouldn't have been as progressive as today, yet there was obviously a procedure where a model of a city or of a house or of some building was erected. And that's really the thought here. The thought here is of the architect, as he has the blueprint before him, or of this model, or whatever it might be. And the architect is constantly consumed with this project, constantly making little tweaks to it, constantly maybe looking at that model and thinking, could I change that? Could I alter that in a little way to benefit this building or whatever it might be? And the Lord then, he shows that as the architect was consumed with every minute detail of this project, so they would always be, his people would always be under his constant care, his constant supervision, and his consistent and his continual safety. And again, rather than being forgetful, the Lord is mindful. He is always mindful of his people. What a blessing tonight to think that he's not only the architect of the great plan and scheme of your life, but like here as the picture is, he is constantly thinking about you. All the little details, all of the small, minute, everyday occurrences, he's always thinking about them. He's always, as it were, intervening in small ways in your life. Maybe at times you don't even see it. Maybe at times you're not even conscious of it, but the Lord's always there. Your walls are always before him. The Lord is always mindful of you. Always thinking about his plans for you, plans to prosper you, plans, as he said in Jeremiah 29, to bring you an expected end, to bring you hope, to encourage your soul, and to bring you comfort. Did the psalmist not encourage himself with this very thought? Psalm 40, verse 5, many, O Lord my God, are thy wonderful works which thou hast done, and thy thoughts which are to usward. They cannot be reckoned up in order unto thee. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. Psalms is saying this, that you just couldn't count. You couldn't count the number of God's thoughts towards him. There's one individual, one person. You just couldn't count them. What an encouragement that must have been to him as he said that the Lord had brought him up from a miry clay and he had set his feet upon a rock and established his going. Whatever that miry clay was in his life, he reminded himself of this great truth that the Lord was always mindful of him and always thinking about him. Psalm 115 verse 12 states, the Lord hath been mindful of us. He will bless us. He will bless the house of Israel. A fellow who called up his girlfriend one day, he said, darling, I love you. I would do everything for you. I would climb Everest for you. I would swim the deepest ocean for you. I would fight a jungle of lions for you. I love you. He went on to say then, a minute later, two later, if it doesn't rain tonight, I'll be over to see you. But when you think of the love of God, in Christ, he's always mindful of us and always thinking of his people. There's one last thought here, his compassion, connection, his concentration. I want you to see here his completion. His completion. Verse 18, we read, as I live, saith the Lord, thou shalt surely clothe thee with them all, as with an ornament, and bind them on thee as a bride doeth. In this verse, there is a picture, very, very familiar picture again, that would have been in the mind of the Jew. The picture here is of a bride. The big day has come. It's her wedding day. And she is almost ready. She has her dress ready. She has her dress on. But something is missing. And that really is the thought here. He speaks of binding them on thee as a bride doeth, and surely clothe them with thee. The something missing is this, is the jewelry. The jewelry, that's really what is meant here by the word ornament. So the bride, she's virtually there, she's virtually ready, but she is just missing that icing on the cake, that piece of jewelry. And the Lord then makes a promise here to this people again, who in its context had forgotten him, had forsaken him, and had felt abandoned by him. He promises essentially here to complete her, to make her finished. He speaks of clothing with ornaments, which simply means jewelry. And he was taking this picture to Israel. And the question then is this, what does this all mean? If he's promising to his people, he's essentially saying you're an incomplete bride, but I'm going to complete you someday. What does he mean by this? Well, at the beginning of the verse, he says this, all these gather themselves together and come to thee. He's speaking of a time when the bride of Christ would be completed. He's here speaking in this verse of that time when Christ would come in his first coming and would inaugurate his spiritual reign, and then would bring in the Gentiles into his spiritual kingdom. He is bringing in then his people. He is going to complete his incomplete bride. And so he's promising to this people who were forsaken, who had felt abandoned. What he's promising simply is this, is the Lord would add to them, that the Lord would extend their number. This incomplete bride, one day it would be complete. One day it would be added to. One day it would have that picture of a complete bride, one that is adorned, one that is completely ready for the coming of her bridegroom. And tonight the proof that God adores his people is that he's still adding to his people. He is still completing his incomplete bride. The fact that we are here tonight and we are worshiping the Lord shows you that he loves his people, because he's still adding to his bride. He is still bringing in his bride. He's still adding to his church. What you really have here is Matthew 16:18 prophesied. I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. He's promising here that he's going to build his bride. And the fact that he is adding to his bride, it was actually a revelation of his love to you this evening. The fact that perhaps the Lord isn't building his church. And yes, you might get discouraged in the way he's building his church. You might want it to come all at once. You might want revival to come. And yes, I trust that is the yearning of your heart. But the fact that the Lord is still adding to his church, whether it be in a gradual and a slow manner, or I trust someday in a wonderfully rapid and quick manner, but the fact that he's still adding to his bride shows us this, as a church, as the church of Christ, that he loves us. We're still incomplete. We're still incomplete. We still, as it were, have to be adorned with the spiritual jewelry of the unsaved coming to Jesus Christ. The fact that the Lord's doing that in a small way shows us that he has not forsaken us. That he has not forgotten his people. He will one day complete his incomplete bride. God's love for his people. May the Lord bless his word to your lives this evening.